Good morning and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Today's show focuses on our recent election season, nationally and in the state of Alaska. In fact, today is the day that electors from all 50 states are due to cast their ballots for the U.S. president. This follows a tumultuous national election that took 4 days to call, and even after it was called, more than 50 lawsuits challenged the results, questioning mail-in ballots. The sheer volatility of this national election gives pause. Pundits write that democracy is being challenged as never before. This hoopla brought heightened interest to the process of democracy and voting, and part of today's program is to share some of the local organizations that actively promote democracy and an engaged electorate. Maybe it's time to get involved. In contrast to the national story, Alaska's election was calmer. As in other states with tight races and recounts, Alaska's election workers did their work carefully and recounts held up. We'll hear more about the job poll workers do and the safeguards in place against any kind of fraud. Our guests come from Alaska Common Ground and the League of Women Voters of Anchorage, both with a commitment to an informed and engaged voter. We also have two representatives from the Alaska Division of Elections to talk about our statewide election. We do welcome your calls anytime during the show. You can engage with us at 550-8433 in Anchorage. Statewide, the number is 1-888-353-5752, and we do take your email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And one more thing, I just would alert folks that we've got links to these organizations and to the Division of Elections, which has a lot of information on its website about how Alaska runs its elections, on our alaskapublic.org/hometown, which is the homepage for Hometown Alaska. So if we talk about things you're interested in and you can't remember exactly where to find them, just check it out on our webpage. Okay, so now I'd like to welcome our guests. We have a big slate today. I'm going to start with Joyce Anderson. Joyce is with the League of Women Voters of Anchorage, and Joyce has a deep history of working in the political, the public sector, I guess, the municipal and public sector. One thing that jumps out from her resume is her work as the municipal clerk, the Minnesota Certified Municipal Clerk. She's got a master's in public administration. Joyce, I'm just looking at this. You've worked a lot in legislative ethics. You were a consultant on elections to the city of Minneapolis and the director of elections and voter registration for the city of Minneapolis. And committed work, making sure elections work well. Joyce, just tell me, how did you come up to Alaska?
I came up here for a conference for the election officials, and I connected with a friend through a friend, and we developed a relationship, and I ended up marrying him and moved up to Alaska.
Well, there you go. That's a classic Alaska story, right? That's great. Next, I'd like to introduce Dick Milius. Dick has lived in Alaska, at least from the bio I found, Dick, at least 34 years. You retired from the Alaska Department of Natural Resources in 2010, where you had worked for almost 30 years. You started working there in 81. You were all over the state. But since you've retired, you've done a lot of volunteer work with the Anchorage School District and also taught training sessions in Alaska's state land history. You've got a bachelor's in geography from the State University of New York and a master's in regional planning from the University of Michigan. Dick, what brought you up here?
I came up here originally on a hiking, canoeing trip in the Brooks Range in 1979. And two of the people on that trip happened to work for a consulting firm that needed somebody that knew coastal and community planning, and I fit the bill and went and talked to their boss and got a job offer a few months later, and I've been here ever since.
Wow, again, another classic Alaska story. That's great. Next, I'm going to jump to Bill Hall. Bill is also with Alaska Common Ground, and one of the things he has done is he was co-creator and leader of Let's Talk Alaska, a library-based program in civic dialogue initiated by Alaskan Common Ground as a collaboration with the Anchorage Library. From its beginning in 2006, the program facilitated doing democracy dialogues in six communities around the state, over 50 since 2012. In the last 2 years, the focus has been on making sense of political change through its Saving Democracy dialogues. And it notes here that the program is presently suspended due to low participation. And I'm just wondering if this election might bring participation back. Bill's a lifelong Alaskan and a former mayor of Cordova. And he did a lot of work to train for these dialogue and public engagement sessions that he ran. And his formal education includes a bachelor's in organizational management and a master's in education in adult education. Bill, you just were born here. You didn't get a chance to come from someplace else.
No, I didn't. It was my parents' choice. They came up in 1939.
Mm-hmm. Did you grow up in Cordova then?
Yes, I did.
And you were mayor of Cordova. That, I always think that's a really important perspective to have on a community. So, and when did you move to Anchorage?
Oh, in about the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
I came and went a couple times, but the 70s, and then I think I settled in the 80s.
Okay. And also we want to welcome Julie Hoosman and Carol Thompson, who both work for the Division of Elections. Julie works in she's a election supervisor in Region 2, which covers Anchorage. It may cover the Matsu. Is that right, Julie?
Correct.
Okay. And then Carol is an absentee. Let's see. I wrote it down here. She is an expert in absentee ballots, and I thought perhaps that might come up in our conversation, so we're lucky to have her here. So, because today is the day that electors vote for the president, and by the way, you can watch it in Anchorage or in Alaska on, I've got it right here. I saw this on the Division of Elections website. You can stream the ceremony on Gavel Alaska, 360 North TV, and KTOO.org. It happens today at 11. And, you know, that might have been a quiet event in past elections, but maybe it's a bigger event this year. So I wanted to take our panelists just to respond quickly to the national election. I mean, it was an election of many firsts, a huge voter turnout on all sides, lots of money spent in this election. Let me just invite our guests. All of our guests come from nonpartisan organizations or state government and, you know, do not take partisan positions. But because they focus on democracy, I thought that the folks from League of Women Voters and Alaska Common Ground could respond a little bit to the events of the national election. Maybe I'll start with you, Joyce. What thoughts do you have?
Well, I think this national election, of course, has been the most interesting national election we've had in many years. It was the COVID situation definitely created some issues. A lot of states had to come up with different ways to allow voters to vote or and so forth. And so I feel that it has never been scrutinized like it has been before. It's scrutinized by the media, let's say the candidates. Other states are scrutinizing other states, the voters, public interest groups, and so on. So I feel this was an election that definitely was a little bit different, especially even with the ads on TV, the amount of campaign material received in the mail. I kept all mine just to see how many campaign pieces I received, and at the end of the election, I was just shocked. It was at least an inch or more thick. So we've definitely had some issues. I feel election officials, since I was one in the past, were definitely a little stressed during this election because of the COVID situation and the fact that they had so many other considerations they had to take into play other than just making sure it was accurate and so forth and so on, which is always their main focus. But this time, it sort of looks to me, and I don't want to speak for our Division of Elections, but based on my experience, it looked like there were two focuses, one for the accurate election, and the second was for the health safety of the voters, workers, and so forth and so on. So just a little bit different than in the past.
Yeah. I mean, the first time we've that many of us have lived through something like COVID-19 and the need to go out and vote, go out and register to vote, all those things. And, of course, that led to huge absentee ballots and mail-ins, and we'll talk a little bit about that later. How about you, Dick? Any thoughts on this momentous national election before we move into the state?
Just that I agree with Joyce. It was an unusual situation with the COVID and such. But we did have a record turnout nationally. And although there were claims after the election that things weren't so smooth, at the time everything seemed to run smooth. And it's good to see election officials throughout the country in both Republican and Democratic states have defended their state processes. And the state and federal courts to this point have upheld all the results of the election. So kind of the checks and balances seem to be working positively to support the election results.
Mm-hmm. And how about you, Bill?
Well, I think looking at Alaska, I think the fact that we have everybody registered for the permanent fund dividend and we've really been experimenting with the mail-in ballots, I think that's working really well. So I'm looking forward to seeing some of that, to hearing from the ladies there from the elections, how that might be improved or what their plans are for that.
Right. Just if you've just joined us, I just want you to know our topic today is sort of democracy in light of the fact that the electors are voting for the president today. But we're also going to be talking a lot about the state of Alaska's election and how it went and what we learned. We have several guests on with us today, Dick Milius and Bill Hall from Alaska Common Ground. Joyce Anderson is with the League of Women Voters of Anchorage. And Julie Hussman and Carol Tompkins are with us from the state of Alaska, Division of Elections. Julie is an election supervisor, and Carol works in the absentee ballot area. I'm probably not giving your exact title correct. I'm sorry. So let's shift our thinking now to the state of Alaska. I think I would like to go to Julie, to just give us a quick overview of, did we get the same kind of turnout in Alaska as we saw nationally, huge numbers? And could you help us get a sense of our mail-in? Did we also mimic the national trend?
Well, as far as the turnout, if we're comparing the presidential to 2016, we had 40,000 more voters vote than we had in the presidential election in 2016.
So more voters came out for this election. That would mirror the national story. And how about maybe, Carol, you can give us a sense of the absentees or mail-ins?
Yeah, we definitely saw a different a trend, although absentee voting has been increasing over the years, both in person and, you know, by mail, actually higher in in-person absentee voting in past. This year, we went from up to 110,920 voters voting absentee by mail or through electronic transmission, comparative to, you know, 29 to 30,000 in past years. Our early vote absentee was up to 82,762 voters who participated in early vote absentee in person, which is a higher number as well. So we definitely had a trend of that happening in Alaska with higher absentee numbers, which is probably similar to many states.
Mm-hmm. And probably due in large part to the pandemic and people thinking, I'll stay out of line, I'll vote by mail, just to cope with the pandemic situation. And, you know, I don't know who can answer this, but I between Carol and Julie, but you know, you have to swell a workforce to handle the elections. And I think a lot of people don't really know how you do that. I was thinking that when I go to my local polling place and I see somebody I know is in the League of Women Voters, I was assuming volunteers ran, you know, polls. But when I was speaking with Julie, she said, no, all election workers are paid. So can you kind of tell us a little bit? I know it's a huge question, but how do you step up and get ready for this? And do you have any sense of numbers statewide how we do this?
Well, as far as how we start out is we reach out to who we have had in the past. We will send a letter out to the chairperson for each precinct that we had in the past and ask them if they are willing to be an election official, the chairperson again, and then they actually give us the list of people that they have had in the past. Well, in this year, 2020, with the pandemic, there were many past, as we call the veterans of elections at polling places, who because of COVID were not willing to do it because of their health reasons, because many of these election officials have been around for a while and they are an older group. So that was something that hit us right off from the beginning.
And so you had to start sort of reaching. Did you end up hiring state workers to do some of it?
That is correct. Yes, we did. They were offered leave, administrative leave, not using their personal leave, to be an election official.
Mm-hmm. And can you give us a sense of what that election workforce, the size of it for Alaska? You probably don't have the demographics. You've mentioned that they're older. But how big does it get and how long are they on? Because there's issues after the polls close, right? There's potential counting. There's potential ballot review. Could you speak a little bit to that?
Yes. As far as the amount of workers that we had statewide, I'd say that it was at least 2,500 plus. And to speak to as far as absentee, let's talk about absentee review board, and they are the election officials who review the ballots. Normally, I would have a force of about 10 to 11 people. And for this election, because of the amount of ballots we received by mail, I had a group of 21. People. So double the amount of people, because obviously the ballots had doubled in the amount. Getting people, even though you have people on the absentee review board, or let's even, and speaking to the polling places, you didn't know if they were still going to be there when it came time to do the job that they needed to. They could call up the day before they were going to report and say, you know, I've just decided this is something I cannot do.
Mm-hmm. Pretty scary.
Yes. Yes. So that's why we projected, as far as when it came to the precincts, we would normally run about six people in a precinct, and we made the numbers at eight. We would always have eight people, because that way, if it came on election day and we had people that were calling out because maybe they had COVID or they just were scared to do it, we would at least have the people that we needed to have in the precincts to conduct an election.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a little feel for how the idea of observers of polls, you know, bipartisan observers or observers from various parties, how does it work in Alaska? Do people apply for that? Is it similar where you go back to the people who've done it year in and year out? How does it work here?
We at the Division of Elections do not choose those people. That is up to the candidates or the political parties. They choose who they will have at the precincts as their poll watchers.
Okay. Do you set any limits on the numbers?
It's one poll watcher per party or per candidate.
Okay. Okay. I want to ask, let's see, of course, Alaska with its geography has some additional challenges, and I'm sure, you know, every election there is similar in that you are waiting for things to come in from across the state. Is there anything, does that happen telephonically? Does that happen by email? Does that happen by mailing you something? How do you get reports from, you know, Kotzebue and Nome and, you know, McGrath?
Well, that's done telephonically as far as on election night. They call their numbers in.
Mm-hmm.
And they're called in to Juneau.
Okay. And do they follow up with something in the mail, too?
Yes. Okay. Well, all their materials are returned to the director's office down in Juneau.
Yeah. Let's see. The other thing that was sort of interesting, I saw a headline where there was a breach in the computer system where voter registration information got out or was hacked. And I, the Division of Elections has information about that, very clear information about, you know, how it happened and what was at risk. Is that the first breach we've had? Julie, do you know?
I'll let Carol speak to that.
Oh, sure. Carol. Thank you.
As far as a breach or a hack, it technically was just a data exposure where people had were able to look at information in the online voter registration system and obtain that information. They were not, nothing was accessible, or they did not go into the voter registration database itself or like our tabulation system, because those are separate systems. So that, to my knowledge, is the only thing we've ever had. We did have in 2016, we did have some probing, but that's kind of, you know, it wasn't really a breach of any data or exposure of any data.
Yeah.
So at this point, that's kind of where we're at with this year.
And I think I read in a news article that people whose data may have been exposed will get a letter in the mail because basically this registration information doesn't capture your email. Is that right?
That is correct. We did send a letter to those voters who whose data was exposed, and we offered up, you know, a year of credit report and monitoring for them, so they can and account monitoring that information, and it provides with them the contact information to sign up for that.
Okay. We're going to take a tiny break right now, but we'll be right back. You're listening to Hometown Alaska, and I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. For more information about this episode, visit us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and today we have a number of guests on with us today that are significant in the area of supporting democracy and engaged voters, and also we have members of the Division of Election on with us talking a little bit about Alaska's election. So just to remind you who's on with us, we have Dick Milius and Bill Hall from Alaska Common Ground. Joyce Anderson is here with the League of Women Voters. Julie Hussman and Carol Tompkins are here from the Division of Elections. And we were just, I guess, let me share our phone numbers if you have questions for these folks about the election. Or about Alaska Common Ground or the League of Women Voters. The number here is 550-8433, and we'll check our email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So anyway, just continuing a little bit more with the state of Alaska's election, and then I'm going to stay with our Division of Election folks, but then move over to our other panelists to get some reaction. I know some of them have been poll workers, have been very involved in local elections, and love to hear from them. So, but before we leave our Division of Election folks, I wanted to ask about the decision to remove party affiliation from the ballot. It happened early on, and was a lot of hubbub and comment about it. And I just, Julie or Carol, can you speak to why that happened and whether it is likely to change in the future? Who's the best person for that?
This is Carol Thompson. So the decision was made early on. We got a new tabulation system this year, and we were looking at the design and the ballot, and we made this decision early, like in, I think, June or whatever.
of the design of the ballot, and that was the decision made, and we went forth with that, and obviously we did go to court, and the courts upheld that decision. As far as the future goes, you know, we've never had a post-election meeting as of yet, so I don't know if there would be any changes to that or not.
Right. Was it a space consideration, do you know? Like, we can't squeeze all this information in or anything else? I'm not sure I read anything anywhere that told me why it happened.
It was, you know, looking at the design and readability and flow and just, you know, just space and all of that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did note that, and I'm pulling you in here, Joyce. I found Joyce sent me a lot of the newsletters that the Alaska League of Women Voters of Anchorage have sent out, and I see that they wrote a letter to the editor in October, essentially worrying about this because they try to put the voter at the center of the election and think about what does the voter need to make a decision. And they were displeased with this decision. Joyce, can you speak a little bit to that?
Yes. As you said, we are really putting the voter at the center of everything with an election. And we felt that by not having the party name on the ballot that they actually filled out when they filled out the paperwork to run for office, that a lot of voters, unfortunately, are uninformed and go to the polling place. And what they do is they look for the information on the ballot, and that gives them information as to how they're going to vote if they haven't already made up their decision. And we felt that that was a really disservice to the voter not to have that information on there. And so that's basically why we wrote the letter to the editor. And we also felt that if this was something that was done, if there's going to be a major change such as this, is that, you know, really there needed to be a lot more information about it until actually it became aware to the public that information was not there. So we were more concerned with providing accurate information to the voter about who actually was running under what label, so to speak, mm-hmm. if you want to use that word.
Yeah. I know some people complained that it was, you know, benefiting one party over another and things like that. You know, Joyce, you mentioned, you know, that voters aren't all paying as close attention because they're holding down jobs, feeding families, doing all kinds of things, and don't always know as much as maybe you know, poll workers or volunteers at you know, organizations that are really focused on democracy. So anyway, that's just really interesting. Do you think that letter has pull? Do you probably work with these election officials all the time, Joyce, so do you have any sense that may have some effect, your letter?
I'm not sure. I do know that the League of Women Voters of Anchorage does also work with the League of Women Voters of Alaska. We deal with local issues. The League of Women Voters of Alaska deals with state issues. This is a state issue. We have brought this information to the forefront with the League of Women Voters of Alaska. And, you know, we don't have actually anything. We haven't really voted on it or come up with any decision, but it is still an issue with the League of the state. And so we may be trying to get some information to the Division of Elections and whoever else to see if that can be changed, mm-hmm. just because of the voter being at the forefront of the election process. So, yes, that is something down the road that we have considered, have not come up with any options yet on how to move forward on that.
Right. And, you know, one question here is that ballot measure 2 may change the way our ballots look anyway. And may require, so I imagine the Division of Elections is, and I'm looking to you, Julie or Carol, still coping with what ballot measure 2, how it may affect what the Division of Elections needs to do. But perhaps this will resolve the issue of requiring, you know, party affiliation on the ballot. Does it, do you know, have you been able to delve into that yet?
No. Kathleen, we're sorry. We have not even We haven't even dissected that bill yet to even voice an opinion at this point of what direction we're going to go. We can tell you that we do anticipate a significant amount of changes to the process with ballot measure number two. But, you know, we haven't had a chance to even sit down and begin to look at the impacts.
Right. And I'm not surprised. So what's the first election that will fall to you to have all your ducks in a row?
That will be in 2022.
Uh-huh. So you've got about a little over a year to get it together. What I'd like to do, we did get a question from Gene, who's we did touch on this a little bit, and we might be repeating something, but he wants to know how many people voted by mail and voted in person in the state. He's concerned about aspects of fraud and double voting. And so first I'm going to go to the Division of Elections, but then I'm also going to go to Joyce, because I know you've worked in this area also. So to you, Julie or Carol, I think you gave out these numbers. Would you mind sharing them again?
Yeah, this is Carol. The state of Alaska is on a statewide system, so we maintain all voters in one complete database and track those voters. But we did have 110,920 voters who participated voting by mail, electronic transmission style ballot. Mail specifically, we had a return rate of 98,816. As far as early vote, absentee, going to a voting location early, beginning 15 days prior to Election Day, we had 82,762 voters. As far as, you know, the double voting goes, you know, part of the decision to prevent that from happening was to maintain the ballots until the seventh day count, so that we can verify that, you know, a person, we have one vote, one person, one vote scenario happening where a voter could not vote two methods.
Mm-hmm. And basically, because you maintain this database, so you get through the election ballots and you've got your database, and then you start looking at the mail-ins and kind of cross, you know.
Correct.
Check.
So, yeah. So we're able to look at, you know, the people who voted in person, who went to the polls on election day. And then we can cross-check those voters who voted an absentee ballot. And the goal, again, is, you know, one person, one vote. So if the person happened to go vote at their polling place and they submitted a by-mail ballot, we could pull that by-mail ballot and only their in-person ballot would have counted.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they voted absentee in person and then voted a by-mail, you know, we can pull those ballots to prevent that from happening. So, you know, that was the numbers. I don't have any statistics on how many would have voted duplicate. I don't know off the top of my head. I didn't pull that number.
Mm-hmm.
That. So I can't respond to that. But that was I do know we had some. So, again, you know, we're trying to make sure that everybody is accurate and that we had the one person, one vote.
Mm-hmm. So we do know some people did vote twice, but we don't know the numbers. But we also know that you caught any duplications.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. To you, Joyce, I know you've worked a lot in the mail-in area. Do you have anything to add here about safeguards against fraud?
No, I think Carol pretty much covered it. I know that my experience has more been with the Muni than with the state.
Mm-hmm.
And the Muni is very similar to what Carol was saying. You know, the process is that you double check to make sure that the person hasn't voted twice, especially if, you know, they voted on election day, like Carol said, in the polling place, and then maybe a mail-in ballot, early voting, whatever you want to call it, a different type of ballot came in from a different type of voting. I think the state of Alaska, as well as the Muni, is very, very secure in that area, and I look at vote fraud being very negligible. And like Carol said, maybe there were some. She doesn't have some numbers, but I would have to say there is always an election. And I go back with my election experience into the 80s when I was director of elections for the city of Minneapolis for 16 years, where you do find that. And usually it's more of an inadvertent thing. They forgot that they voted by mail, and so they went to the polling place and voted. And we had that happen in the city of Minneapolis as an example, where a young woman lived in the city of Minneapolis. We do have Election Day registration in Minneapolis, so she was able to go in the polling place, provide ID, and vote. And then her mother called her, and her mother said, and the reason I know this is I testified before a grand jury, but her mother said to the daughter, well, we got to go vote. Well, the daughter didn't want to say she already voted, so she went to St. Paul and voted. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Was that intentional? Was that because the person wanted to commit vote fraud? No.
Yeah.
The girl didn't want to tell her mother she already voted.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, there are certain situations, that one I can think of, but there are others maybe where you might have forgot. So I don't feel that there, as Carol was saying, that there is this concentrated intentional vote fraud out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't happen. There's always an election where something happens. And I know that Carol and Julie will agree with that, because you've got so many cogs in the wheel that, you know, it happens.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe once, you know, maybe twice, but hey, it's not concentrated. It's not, there's not somebody out there, you know, doing it and encouraging and all that sort of thing. It's
yeah.
more inadvertent. So
yeah.
that's where I would come with
yeah.
that.
Yeah. I have one more question for the Division of Election folks that is sort of specific to the way you run elections. The 1 week delay, we talked about that is a way for you to secure your in-person database, so you know everybody who voted, and then you can turn to your absentees. But there was lots of, you know, discussion about that. Could it happen faster, et cetera, et cetera? Do you think there might be changes in that area? And I don't know whether that's Carol or Julie.
This is Carol. When you look at Alaska, you're looking, you know, at a statewide level. You know, the lower 48, everything's done, you know, county-based in most cases. You have a road system. For Alaska, you know, things have to come in from all different areas to do voter history. We have it flying in on planes that may only come in once a week. We, you know, we get all that material, and we have to process all the in-person voting history, and that takes, you know, a few days to be able to do all that, plus receiving all the materials that may that are coming from other areas, Kenai Peninsula Borough, Kodiak, you know, the northern areas of Alaska are coming in, you know, clear down to the Aleutian chain, et cetera. So, you know, we're working through all that, trying to get the history done, and then, you know, you have your review boards that are coming in to review all the ballots, and then, of course, you know, just the volume this year. The opening process itself was humongous for us. I mean, it was just a lot of work involved to get those out faster. Normally, you know, you think about this, you know, a region may only have, you know, 20,000 ballots. This year they may have had 60,000 ballots. So you're looking at, you know, way more review, way more ballots to get opened and ready. Even though we had, you know, a lot of people, we also have spacing issues that we had to consider, and
mm-hmm.
making sure people were spaced out and mm-hmm. healthy, you know, to keep the crew healthy as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the COVID really did, you know, for example, my office, I normally hire 10 people to process absentee ballot applications. Well, I had 35 people. I had to get more space. I had to buy more desks. I had to get more computers.
Wow.
You know, I mean, we just went from, you know, a smaller size into this larger volume of absentees that we had to work with.
So yeah.
As far as with the future is concerned, you know, we always evaluate what we did after every election to see what improvements we can make. That's just part of the process. I've been working for elections for 31 years. That's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You go back and you evaluate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's hard to say. It might change or it might not change or might change in a different way. So we'll just have to stay tuned and see. I one thing I wanted to say is I'm only aware of two recounts, if that's the right term, a House district in Anchorage, and then I think ballot measure 2. And I, as I understand it, the recounts came back solid. And I think that's a window into the work that goes on at the election worker level. And it must it must make you feel good as supervisors and overseers of the work to see this. Were there just two? And you must breathe a sigh of relief when the recount is done and the numbers are...
Technically had one recount, which was the House District 27, which came out. We did have also recounts in the primary election that came out as well, spot on. The other count we did was an audit of the system. We considered it an audit, and we did ballot measure number 2, and I was actually down in Juneau for that process last week. The numbers were within, just a few differences that happened, most precincts were spot on, absentee, we had one or two. You were sitting there with 6,700 ballots, and you have to hand count all those ballots and look at all those ballots, how far do you dig into it? But we did the whole audit, and it came, almost right on. So we were very pleased about that. And remember, with Alaska's system, we are a paper-based system, and we have many boards involved. Alaska, we program our own elections. We have a state review board that does auditing of the programming and we have a regional board that goes through and does logic and accuracy testing of our system. We also, do the 1% review where we have, every single district has a precinct hand counted as part of the state review process. There's an audit done by the state review board of the precincts, the absentee, the questions, looking at all the numbers. I think we do have a secure system, and we are very accountable and accurate.
Yeah. We need to take a tiny break here. I have one more question for our Division of Election folks that just came in from a listener. So as soon as we come back, I'll ask that, and then we'll move into another part of our program. But you are listening to Hometown Alaska, and I am your host, Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. You can find Hometown Alaska on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Today, our topic is both the national election, but especially the state election. We are talking with election officials from the Division of Elections, Carol Tompkins and Julie Hussman. And we also have, and we're going to get more into this in this part of the program, two organizations that really work hard to make sure voters know the information they need and can learn about complex issues that relate to having a healthy democracy. So we're going to go there very soon. But to Carol and Julie, we did get an email question asking about absentee ballots that are cast in the state election. You can tell if you're ballot arrived, but you might not know until after the election if maybe there was a problem with a signature or something. And so the question is, is there a cure there? This listener thinks that there is a cure in the municipality where you have a chance to correct. What can you tell us about that in the state election?
It is my understanding as well that the municipality does have an ordinance that allows for a ballot cure, but the state of Alaska does not have a law that allows for ballot cure.
So that would be something that people could ask their legislators to get behind if that's the kind of thing they want. So it is true that you it would be after the election when you learned that perhaps something was wrong with your ballot in the state.
That is correct. The state is required to send a notification letter to all voters who may have had their ballot partially counted or not counted at all due to an error in the envelope return. So we do send that notification out to voters, but if you want a ballot cure, there does need to be something passed by the legislature that allows the division. division to do that.
All right. Well, I want to save. Thank you both, Carol and Julie. And if you need to go, please feel free to go. We're going to turn to more the League of Women Voters and Alaska Common Ground and their missions. And I don't know. You're welcome to stay though. But I just wanted to let you know if you're under the gun, you can go. I wanted to just give Dick Milius a chance. He has worked in polls here in Alaska. I don't know, Dick, how many years did you tell me? You wanted to say something about the situation here in Alaska.
I worked as a poll worker, actually as a chairperson for one of the polling places for 10 years. And I just wanted to thank the Division of Elections for a couple things they did this year that made it both safe and adequately staffed. Regarding staffing, I mean, this issue was brought up, but my polling place, I've had three regular workers who are in their 80s, and they didn't want to work this year. And the decision to allow state workers to work at the polls made a huge difference in terms of recruiting people. So that was a brilliant idea. And they also had plenty of protective gear, not just for workers, but for everybody that walked in the door. We had hundreds of masks and gloves and such. And so they did an excellent job of dealing with the pandemic and the staffing shortage. The other thing I was just going to add was that if more people worked at polls, I think there'd be less people concerned about fraud and irregularities, because some of the things that I read about that people were complaining about that were alleging fraud were things that are, you know, minor issues that come up in the course of running a polling place that get resolved. And so I think if more people worked at the polls, they'd have a better understanding and more confidence in the process.
All right. I agree. And I have one more question, actually, asking about a change in the webpage at Alaska Elections about voter information. I guess the question, I don't know if we still have our election folks on here with us. They just have a question about the change in information on the website. I'm not exactly sure how else to phrase it. Is Julie or Carol still there? When you make changes to the web page, how do you let folks know about it? You don't. Maybe they just have to find it.
We make changes all the time to the web page because we add information on a regular basis. I mean, it is a web page. People have to go there and look. I don't know of any other way of...
Is it something like the web page is only available from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m.?
No. The web is available 24/7.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I hope I'm understanding this question.
And we're always adding information. You know, depending on what's going on, we add information or we bring information out so you get faster access to it.
Yeah. Okay. I hope I understood that listener's question. That seems to be that, is it accessible, you know, more than just between 7 a.m. and 8 p.m.? All right. Well, go ahead. Were one of you going to say something?
No. Uh-uh.
Okay, great. I do want folks to get the chance to hear the mission of Division of the League of Women Voters. So I'm going to turn to you, Joyce, and just, we probably have about 10 minutes, but can you talk to us a little bit about your mission and are you healthy? Are you getting new members? Do you think this election and the interest in it might bring you more folks to the League of Women Voters?
You are very correct in that. We have had new members throughout this whole process join, and they, I'd say maybe at least 15 new members, which is good. And right now we have close to 70 members for the League of Women Voters of Anchorage. And we have a variety of individuals. And the League, by the way, is not just for women. Men can also join. And the little joke that we have is women is W-O and then M-E-N. So, so
includes both.
Yes. So men are encouraged as well. Our mission is, as you said earlier, we are a nonpartisan organization. And our mission, and I've said this a couple times, is basically that the voter is the most important person during an election. So what we like to do is we like to, have them informed and active participation in government, which is basically what our motto is. So we are out there. There's two ways to look at that. The first step in becoming an informed voter is actually registering to vote. So we, unfortunately, this year we have not, but we have gone out to many different organizations and registered voters. We are also working with the court system for the naturalization ceremonies and go register voters at the naturalization ceremonies. I've also given a presentation at one of the naturalization ceremonies because they usually have a speaker. So I did talk about the importance of voting. So those are some ways. We also have, through our youth vote program and our director of voter service, we go into the high schools every year. We register seniors. We go to the senior classes in all the schools. We work with the social studies teachers. So we feel the first step to voting, of course, is to register to vote. So we're very active in the registration process.
Mm-hmm.
The second part of our mission is to inform voters of information that they need to make an informed choice, whether it be a candidate or whether it be a question or a ballot measure or whatever. With the state comes out with a voter guide, so we're not involved in that at all, which I have to commend the state for their voter guide. And I also want to say rather quickly that I think we need to give a big round of applause to the Division of Elections and all the individuals who worked in the election this year. It's just been a unique year, and I really think they deserve that applause.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to add that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But for the Muni election, we have been doing what we call a ballot pamphlet for years. The Muni contracts with us, we put a ballot pamphlet together. We've got all the information that someone needs about voting, what candidates are on the ballot, how to get in touch with the candidates, website, phone numbers. And then we also have ballot measures. So we work with the Muni on that. That is delivered to every household. So we have a contract with a company to print that for us and then also to get it out and distributed. So we feel that's a big, important part of the League of Women Voters to make sure that that information is readily available to, like I said, we're talking basically Muni here, but the Muni. And so we like to do that. I'm going to read here what we have in one of our newsletters, if I could. We're talking about the League of Women Voters, and I said, we will continue to work to promote a democracy where every person has the desire, the right, the knowledge, and the confidence to participate in the electoral process. I feel that our elections are very safe. I feel that personal experience here with the Muni and with the state, I was on the state election policy work group that looked at elections and was making decisions down in the future with recommendations from the work group for maybe changes to elections. So I've been involved in the elections on the state level a little bit, but more so in the Muni. And I do feel that, I just wanted to add that I feel our elections here in our state are very secure. The integrity of the election process is just, 100%. So
great. Yeah. I actually want to move over to Bill Hall and Dick Milius, just because I can see the clock ticking down here, and I wanted them. Dick, if you could just speak a moment or two about the mission for Alaska Common Ground. I know I'm familiar with many presentations in the community about fiscal challenges to the state, and I remember seeing some of Bill's Let's Talk Alaska. Just in a brief bit, and I think your organization is maybe 30 years old. I'm not sure. Dick?
This is Dick. And, we'll be 30 years old next year. We were founded by Esther Warnicke, who was frustrated by the fact that there seemed to be increasing polarization in a lot of the discussions. She was Commissioner of Natural Resources, so her focus was kind of on natural resource issues. But she proposed or formed the group to bring people together to talk about the various issues that are important to Alaskans in a kind of a non-hostile or friendly, polite, structured environment. And, for example, this past fall, we had two debates on the two ballot measures. They were two-hour-long Zoom events where we had the people for the ballot measure and people against it speak in a debate with a moderator, and it allows for much more informed discussion than you get in 30-second or 60-second sound bites, which is what most people hear. So one of our goals, our mission statement is to engage and inform diverse citizens to cultivate understanding and cooperation on issues important to Alaskans. So like I say, the ballot measures are an example. We've talked a lot for years about the fiscal issues of the state. Recently, we've been focusing on climate change and housing issues. We actually have three events coming in early next year to talk about the impact or things people are doing to address climate change in Anchorage. The first one of those is the last Thursday in January. So you can check out our website for more information. I know since we're running out of time, but our website is akcommonground.org.
Okay, and I just want to go to Bill. Bill, we probably have about 2.5 minutes, and you know, I thank you for being here, and we didn't get our conversation over to you as fast as I would like. But when I talked with you before the show, you talked a lot about leading a lot of conversations about democracy in the community over the years, and you had. You are somewhat flummoxed by the polarization we find ourselves in, and you did say to me, you know, maybe it comes down to what are our values, finding values that are common to all of us. Could you speak just a little bit? We probably have about, I don't know, 2 minutes, but speak a little bit to the experience you have trying to bring people together to talk about democracy.
Sure. That's why we're called Alaska Common Ground, to try to bring people together. And Let's Talk Alaska, which was a part of Alaska Common Ground, we held dialogues all across the state. And dialogues are intended to allow people to listen and interact with one another so that they can find some common ground. The problem we found is that we never could get people to come who were of a conservative political philosophy. And so we didn't really have that diversity of beliefs that was necessary to have good conversations and actually to create the common ground. So part of it was that trying to figure out a topic that would attract people was difficult. What I finally came to understand or believe in was that if we want to try to repair the relationships that society rests on, then we should be talking about fundamental values. So the common ground should be in the values that we all have for what kind of a democracy do we want. What are the fundamental needs for our democracy? So it's interesting, on a number of the dialogues I did, I asked people to list their values. There was always a silence and a hesitation, and people were saying, well, what do you mean? And finally, we would get to it. So I came around to the point of view of saying, well, let's just say, well, what do you value about this? What makes you feel good about this? So again, the conversations we've tried to focus on, or I did before we took a pause, is, again, having people talk about what do they value about democracy, what makes them feel good about democracy, and to share those kind of conversations.
Mm. Do you know if more sessions are planned, or is that in the think tank stage at this point?
Other than I'm willing to do something if we can figure out how to do it and if there's an interest in people doing it. It's hard to do it over... Over Zoom,
yeah.
But we've experimented a little bit on Alaska Common Ground, and actually, it's worked better than I thought it would.
Bill, so, I have to say, we have to end it there. We're the clock is ticking, and I would love to. Maybe we'll find a way to have you back to talk more about this, especially if you launch any additional series. So I have to say thank you so much to Dick Milius and Bill Hall from Alaska Common Ground, Joyce Anderson from the League of Women Voters of Anchorage, Julie Hussman and Carol Tompkins from the Division of Elections for the State of Alaska. Hometown Alaska will be taking a short hiatus through the Christmas and New Year's holidays. We'll be back next year on January 11th. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. Ammon Swenson was our audio engineer. Thank you so much for joining us today on Hometown Alaska.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.